Good afternoon, New York. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of The Organic View. Our podcast is now available on iTunes, so for those of you that can't catch the show live, please be sure to download the show. For those of you that think it's cool to have an exotic pet or even take one out of the wild and try to domesticate it, think again. There's a reason why animals exist in nature as they do and should be left alone. They're dangerous, and they will never be domesticated. Today, I'm going to talk to Laura Lassiter. Laura is an animal advocate, ambassador, and communicator. Her vision is to help raise the awareness of animals as sentient beings and establish an animal bill of rights that will support the end of cruelty and abuse, whether it's through animal experimentation, overpopulation, or cultural traditions, or should I say cultural trends. A while back, Michael Vicks was convicted of participating in games that involved cruelty to dogs. Now, while the courts did make an example out of him, there are so many other people that are getting away with it, and they kind of consider it to be, they don't even consider it to be anything bad. For example, the Running of the Bulls takes place every July in Spain, and people flock to these events. There seems to be some type of obsession with the mutilation and the cruel treatment of these animals. Hello, Laura, are you there?
I am, June. How are you doing today?
Hi, Laura. Welcome to The Organic View. Laura, would you tell our audience about yourself?
Yes. First of all, I would like to thank you for having me on. I'm real excited about being able to talk about a passion. And also, I want to thank everyone who is taking their time to listen in and participate with us. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, you're very, very welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on here.
Thank you. Well, anytime we can talk about animals, especially the big cats or even little cats, hey, I'm all ready and let's go. Basically, I talk with animals. I was never quieted as a child, June, regarding my ability, our natural ability, by the way. Everyone has this ability to talk with animals or plants or, you know, anything. And as a result, my passion was always helping animals, rescuing whatever I could do for them. And about almost 5 years ago, after Katrina, I had an opportunity to get certified through United Animal Nations because we found out during Katrina, which was a total disaster, even in rescue events for the most part, that we were going to have to be certified because we were rescuing animals through the day and they were getting stolen at night and being fought to their death right outside of the compound. And so,
wow.
That
didn't even make the news.
No, a lot of that did not make the news. And everybody was disorganized. It was a disaster in which we'd never seen the likes of before. And everybody was doing the best they could with what we had and where we were at and everything. But we discovered that we were going to have to be certified so that we could have credentials and hopefully minimize, if not totally eliminate, that kind of activity during a disaster rescue operation especially. And Carol Baskin, who is the founder of Big Cat Rescue, was helping some of her volunteers get certified as a EARS responder, which is Emergency Animal Rescue, and through UAN, and had a volunteer project out at Big Cat Rescue. And the demand was so great here, June, for the certification program that they had to extend it 2 days. I thought I was scheduled for Saturday, but I ended up in the Sunday class. So Saturday, Carol had a volunteer project out at her sanctuary, and I thought, you know, I've lived in Tampa, and unfortunately, I wasn't that familiar with Big Cat Rescue. And I thought, I'm going to go out there because I hear about it all the time, and I went. I had laryngitis because I had just returned from Katrina, and after spending 8 months working in that process there, and she kind of discovered I spoke ocelot, which we'll talk about in a minute. Ocelot is
okay,
a cat, yeah. And the rest is history.
Hey, let me ask you a question. What is the process like for getting the certification? I'm glad that you brought up the fact that the certification was necessary in order to prove that you are legitimate people looking to do something that is good for the animal's well-being and to also create some type of order. It's amazing. I read about this scam that was going on Craigslist, and it doesn't pertain necessarily to the type of animals that you work with, but people that could not provide a home for their animal, whether it was a purebred or whatnot, basically they would put an ad out on Craigslist, and people would sell them, even though they were claiming to give them a home. So apparently there's some type of terminology that is now listed out there when you were trying to find a new home for your animal. And I can only imagine all the different scams and whatnot for people that were taking these poor animals and trying to sell them to people who were looking for exotic pets and whatnot. So, yeah, that certification is really, really important. But if you wouldn't mind, could you just tell us what is involved with obtaining the certification?
Well, through United Animal Nations and the Humane Society of the United States also has a program called DART, D-A-R-T, that you can go and there's several levels and in which, you know, depending on how involved you want to get, but for the basic level, you will have to, I believe UAN is still one day, but it's 8 hours. DART and UAN both have other programs to deal with, you know, rescuing large animals in addition to the domestic animals or the smaller animals. So it doesn't really take that long. It's not very expensive at all. And usually the local humane societies like the ASPCA also have programs that, now, at least here in Tampa, you can take it like one or two nights a week for like just, you know, 1 or 2 hours a week. But it extends over a few months and everything if that will fit in your schedule better also instead of like a weekend or a two-day seminar or something like that. It's very simple, but it's going to be very difficult when we have, and it's not a question of if, but when we have other disasters, if you want to participate as far as the hands-on, you will have to be certified. And I think that after Katrina, that's almost mandatory.
Now, I had no idea that there were so many, I mean, I knew about dogs and cats, and some of the trade shows, I remember talking to folks that owned pet food companies, they were the manufacturers of pet food. They were talking about how much product they actually donated to the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and they were saying, you know, people were donating food and supplies and so on and so forth, but nobody even thought about the animals. And after talking to you, I had no idea that that these types of animals even were abandoned. You don't really think about that. So what types of animals were you working with?
You mean at Katrina?
Yeah.
Oh, we were dealing with everything from horses to, you know, any kind of livestock to, unfortunately, the majority of them were pit bulls that we found chained everywhere. People had left them in cars. It was a horrific scene when we got down there. And I got in early because I had adopted a dog through the Aussie Rescue who, Nori, was also a first responder and also in law enforcement. So we kind of got started on the scenes early, and I have a lot of network capabilities because not only working in animal communication, part of what I do also, I work with a lot of rescue groups, June. I will even do readings pro bono as we, as the girls walk death row at the, you know, humane societies or the county shelters, and as they're pulling them off the e-tables or off the euthanasia tables. And so the network is quite extensive, and we were just dealing with every kind of living creature, whether it be a bird or, you know, whatever, because most of those people left thinking they were only going to be gone for 2 or 3 days, and as we know now, it turned out quite longer. But we were still finding live animals 90 days, even 120 days after Katrina, locked in homes, still alive.
And then they wanted to put them down? The shelters?
Well, you got to remember, you know, I was working with one of the big humane societies down in Biloxi, Mississippi. I was talking with Tara High, who is the director there, and sweetheart, they were talking up to like 900 animals a day. I mean, it was just incredible, the overload and the amount of it was just mind-boggling. Nobody was prepared.
Wow.
Nobody was really organized, and everybody was kind of working on their own, getting things done. So it was a tremendous job. Everybody was doing the best they could and everything, but I think we learned a lot. We left a lot of animals behind, unfortunately, and it did not make the news for the most part, and it made the news, and it got out of the news real quick.
I'm
sorry?
I said, I wonder why that happened. Why? I mean, we heard everything possible to do with the coverage, the damage, the aftermath, the lack of response from the government, the you name it, every bit of drama possible. But why is it that you think the media neglected to inform the public about what was going on with these animals? I think that's a complete disgrace.
Well, I think there's more animal-related stories that are hitting the news now, of course. I think back then, and this was a different, you know, consciousness 5 years ago, or more than that, with Katrina. But, you know, until the public demands more animal awareness stories that they want to, and especially feel-good stories, we hear about the pit bulls. We hear all the bad things. It's time to focus on the good things now, because there's so many good things going on out there, and people that are, you know, the frontline workers that you never even read about that are making a difference every day for the animals. And I think it's just, you know, it's up to us to take responsibility to demand what we want to focus on. And unfortunately, a lot of it has been the negative and also the drama. And, you know, you kind of get lost in the minutiae instead of focusing on the situation.
Yeah, no, I actually read an article this morning that Bolivia has put into legislation, or made it rather against the law, for animals to be used, I think, in circuses, which is huge. And even though Bolivia is not exactly a world power, it's just the fact that, okay, you have other parts of the world that are actually taking a stand. And I'm just wondering, how long is it going to take the United States to rise up and do something as well? I mean, you hear about cases of animal cruelty all over the world, and as you said, we should focus on the positive things, and hopefully that will in turn enable more positive actions to take place. So,
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things at Big Cat Rescue, Carol is very, very active in getting laws changed for the big cats. We are very proactive in getting and making people aware of the plight of the big cat, because we can clearly see a correlation between how we, you know, especially with the domestics, how even little cats mirror or reflect back to us the human condition, and more specifically, our inner landscape. And so at Big Cat Rescue, we are very, very much about education and getting laws changed to protect these cats and make a difference in their lives.
Well, that is just, it's incredible to actually hear about an organization that isn't just saving them, which is a huge part, but is actually changing the laws. That's something that you don't often hear about. So that is just, it's just great. And as you said, to focus on the positive things. Can you just talk about some of the ways that the big cats are exploited?
Yes, we have several cats at Big Cat Rescue that have come from either the entertainment business. We even have Nikita, who is a beautiful lioness who was rescued from a drug raid. We also have a drug raid.
A drug raid?
Yeah.
Why would somebody have an animal like that as a pet? If they're, I mean, are they looking for this animal to be used for protection or to attack any of their enemies? Why would somebody do that, do you think?
Well, of course, only they know. I don't think this is specific to any kind of culture per se. I would tend to go along the lines of that they, you know, it's just a big guard dog. You know,
Nikita's
a pretty big girl, and when you come across a lioness, you know, personally, I'm probably not, it's not likely I'm going to step up and try to, you know, go beyond where she is regardless. And so, you know, people have big cats for different reasons. That's part of what we do at Big Cat Rescue is educate the public as to why they're adorable. I mean, they're adorable as little kittens and everything, but they grow up to be big kitties. And, you know, all of a sudden then, as soon as they get big, people realize, well, and not only that, but, you know, a lot of breeders represent information that maybe is not correct. And so a lot of people, if they don't do their research, will get like a serval, who is a perfect size of a cat that they think will make a very good house cat until it reaches, you know, like a teenager, the hormones kick in and it gets territorial, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's biting and or spraying the house.
Wow.
And, you know, these are wild creatures. You know, we can take the wild, we can take the cat out of the wild, but we're not going to take the wild out of the cat. And that's something that people just don't get, even if they're born in captivity, because we hear that a lot. Oh, it's okay. You know, we bred this cat, and it's been raised in our family, in our living room. And, well, okay, that's interesting, but kind of irrelevant as far as the facts, because the facts are you still have a wild cat. And at some point, again, it's not a question of if, it's when this cat is going to exhibit its wild nature.
Well, that is an excellent, excellent point. And I think what happened last year in Connecticut, there was a chimpanzee that weighed about 200 pounds that mauled this woman who was coming to rescue her friend, who was the quote-unquote owner of this chimp. And why this woman was allowed to have a chimpanzee and treat it in the fashion that she did is beyond me. Apparently, she would shower with it. She would give it champagne in long-stem glasses. She did all sorts of things with this chimpanzee and treated it as though it was an actual human companion, when in fact it is still a chimpanzee, and exactly just what you said was what had happened. At some point, the chimpanzee became irate, and its natural instincts kicked in, And when these human beings tried to go near it, it attacked fiercely and with such force that the woman's friend is now permanently disabled and disfigured, for that matter. And unfortunately, the price that was paid was that the chimp, who was just being himself, had to be put down by the police because he was a danger to anyone that was near it. And the chimpanzee did nothing wrong. It was just being itself. When you have human beings that are doing these crazy things with animals that should be left in the wild, and especially this one woman was giving the chimp Xanax. For what reason? She wasn't a medical doctor or a vet, but she felt compelled, I guess, to share whatever she was medicating herself with this animal. And then you have all sorts of mayhem that occurs. And the same case with these cats. I think it is really, really disturbing that people will get these animals and not even think twice about the fact that they're creatures that have feelings. They are creatures that will get irate and have the same types of feelings as other beings, especially with being territorial and whatnot, as you just mentioned. Just out of curiosity, how big is the exotic animal trade?
It's right up there with illegal drugs and ammunition trade. It's one of the top three. It's incredible, the billions, we're talking billions now with a B, of dollars that are spent buying and selling animals, whether that be for body parts or breeding, you know, for also canned hunts or for pets, whatever. It's for entertainment purposes. It's really a huge, huge, huge business.
Now, you had just mentioned that they're used for body parts. What do you mean by that?
Well, in China, they are, and by the way, we have two times the amount of tigers living in captivity here in the U.S. as there are in the wild in the world.
Wow.
So, yes, you start putting numbers to this, and it's incredible. And since this is the year of the tiger in China, the Chinese still like tiger wine, and some of the old medicine is still used for body parts, you know, whether it to be mostly to make men real virile. And so they believe that they will harvest what we call harvest an animal, because they are kept in tiger farms. There are literally farms that have these animals in cages that are not any bigger than the animal can get up and turn around in, and they will breed them and keep them, and then at a certain maturity, they will be harvested for whatever body part, and or put the whole carcass in a big vat that they will then make tiger wine. It's really pretty sickening. And
it sounds just like our factory farms over here, where they basically take animals. And I've seen them. I saw them when I was little. I would visit different farms. It wasn't as though it was a field day type trip. They were just different farms that I would visit with my father, and my father wanted me to see and understand firsthand what was going on. Because when you tell people something and they see it, and they see how these animals are inhumanely treated, it's a big difference and it makes a bigger impact. And actually, I spent a month in China, and when I would go to the zoos, I saw many animals that were kind of, they did not exactly look very well. Some animals looked so incredibly lethargic, it just made me wonder, okay, are these animals being fed properly? Are they being abused? What's going on here? And, just to learn about tiger wine, that's just, it just blows your mind. And go ahead.
Yeah, it's incredible how just like eating dog or cat meat in Korea, you know, they will stand behind, well, that's the tradition, that's, you know, that's our culture, that's the way we've always done things. Well, there's alternative methods now, and part of it's very, very difficult because, June, as you get into the animal area, you know, there's always money. You know, even in the legislation, we're always coming up against, you know, who has the most money to pay for the most ads or, you know, payoffs. And you know, they may not want to talk about this, but it's still in some areas, in some cases, the Good Old Boy Network. And there's lots of things going on that are not legal, the public does not know about. And even at times, we, the public, are protesting. They're continuing to do it anyway, as though we do not have a voice and they don't hear us. And so, you know, we just have to keep going forward and spreading the word, just like what you're doing today, to educate the people and to get them to do a little research, give them the information, where they can find it, how they can help, and, you know, just keep moving forward to change these laws and to also provide maybe other solutions for the people not to kill these animals. I know Big Cat Rescue is very involved with the Snow Leopard Trust. And what they have done is they have literally gone into the areas where they were killing these very rare animals now, where they would be able to go ahead and have people make like goods, you know, by hand, and give them other sources of income other than killing a snow leopard. And it's working. And so those are the types of things that, again, Big Cat Rescue is involved with, and networking, so that it's a community cooperative effort now, so that people have other options other than to, and this is another way, you know, a cat's exploited for the pelt, for the money, of course, you know, to feed their family. You know, they are being shown and given other ways in order to do this, and it's really incredible.
I'm actually very anti-fur, and I inherited a fur coat from my mother when she passed, and before I really understood what was going on, I had been given another fur coat, and they are basically sitting in storage. I refuse to wear them, and I do not support anybody who does wear fur. I think, knowing what I do know, I just can't, if more people understood what was going on, maybe they would think before they spent the money, because if there's no demand, obviously the supply is going to diminish. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Laura, is when I went to China, I bumped into, on a rare occasion, some Americans, and we were chatting about meat and this and that, and I was very particular about what I did eat over there. At the time, I was not vegan, but I refused to eat any type of meat. Period. I didn't, you know, I just told them I have severe allergies, and they kind of just left me alone. So I would stick to basically vegetables, fruit, and rice. What I was told was about something called imperial cuisine. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
That freaked me out. That really freaked me out. Apparently, what I was told, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I was told was that the very wealthy businessmen will take an animal that is on the endangered species list, and they will kill it, just eat a part of it, and then dispose of the rest of it very haphazardly, just for the sake of being able to eat its flesh.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that, and I'm not going to digress, there really is a point here, with working with the big cats, that I quickly discovered more so than our domestic animals, because a kitty is a kitty is a kitty, I got to tell you. Now, they'll, you know, range in size, but you'll be surprised how similar big kitties and little kitties are, June. There's just, you know, a kitty is a kitty. But one of the things working with the big cats that I quickly discovered was they've never lost their connection with nature, never. Our animals, our domestic animals, are more of a reflection of, unfortunately, a lot of our, I'm going to call them imbalances, because, you know, we live with them all the time. They are very much connected with us, and we have altered, for the most part, their lifestyles in a lot of ways. Although that can be applied to the wildlife now, basically they have kept their connection with nature. Now, how does that apply to what you just talked about, eating the flesh? Well, first of all, again, in some cultures, it is believed that in order to get the power or the essence of what that animal represents, you have to partake of the flesh or some kind of body part. Because in most of these cultures, June, they still know and believe that there is a soul connection between animals and humans. This is something that we have kind of forgotten over here in our society, okay? So they believe that one of the ways, the best way, is to partake of it in the flesh form. Now, what's really interesting is back in the, there was a gentleman, his name was Chadwick, I believe, who discovered or kind of thought that humans and our birth, if you will, of us kind of going from ape-like mentality to having some kind of awareness was as a direct result. It was Bruce Chadwin. He was a British adventurer, and he believed that the prehistoric cats coexisted in the same caves as we did, as humans did.
Interesting.
And he never he died before he could prove his ideas, and so a Dr. C.K. Brain came along later with a great book called The Hunters or The Hunted, and started to scientifically document the first jump in our awareness or in our consciousness, June, occurred way back there at an ice age period in which we did coexist and interact with a big cat, specifically a saber-toothed cat, in a big cave. And that one of the reasons that, and this is just submitting a possibility, one of the reasons that we, society, and also some of these cultures have an initiation into quote-unquote manhood by killing an animal or go on a hunt for an animal or partake of its body parts is because we are reenacting a cellular memory that happened eons ago when we lived with these big cats, and instead of them hunting us, we started hunting them.
Interesting.
Did I lose you?
No, not at all. It's just like when you go to any of the museums and you see cavemen, and they're often pictures, or even just pictures of them, but usually the displays within the museum will show like a saber-toothed tiger or something like that. And it just makes perfect sense because they had to coexist together.
Well, we did, and science is proving that, and has proved, of course, that we did. The big cats are very much responsible for a jump in our consciousness. And so, and a lot of cultures believe that animals are tremendous blessings from God, and so they want to partake of that in a direct way. You know, when we have tours at Big Cat Rescue, we don't have that many because we don't like to stress the cats. We're very, very conscious of the needs of the cats out there. And I have often found people's first reaction when they come, you know, like within 3 or 4 feet of this cat, that because we're not like a zoo, we have guided tours, and but you're very close to the cats. There's just an awe factor. It's like taking your breath away. And people to be that close in the proximity of this majestic power, this presence, literally does take your breath away. And my personal belief is that one of the things that people want a big cat for is for that connection. Again, you know, instead of going within ourselves and remembering that power, that we look outside of ourselves, and one way that we can have that power, or so we think, is to literally lay our hands on it, you know, physically take possession of it, okay? Which goes back to the cultural things again as far as partaking of the flesh and everything. And so this leads to, you know, actually wanting to, you know, not only grab a hold of it, but to touch it and caress it and have that physical connection. Even though it is really not good for either of us, there's, to me, there's no respect there for the animal.
No, not at all.
But to me, you know, that is what is happening, and people don't recognize that, you know, we're going outside of ourselves to try to get something that's already within us. And so, and just like with the white tigers, you know, there's really no such thing as a white tiger. You know, they're all white tigers come from one male. So every white tiger you see either is a hybrid or from terrible, terrible crossbreeding and inbreeding, and all of them have genetic mutations.
Well, isn't it just an albino?
No.
So it's an, I forgive me, I don't know much about them. I you know, just like the rest of everybody else listening out there, can you tell us more about them? What makes them so desirable and so significant?
Well, you know, do you ever find a white animal in nature? If you do, it does not survive very long. Even a mother will not tend to take care of a white baby because its energy, her energy, has to be devoted into making sure of the survival of, you know, of their babies, of the ones that can survive. A white, there's no camouflage. You're not going to survive. And even hunting, you're not going to be able to hunt because you can't hide. There's nowhere to hide. And so white tigers are bred because of the rarity. Just like white lions, the white lion has returned now in Africa after being gone for so many eons. And they have a tremendous message for us right now, by the way, for humankind. But they're hunted because, and I think an average tiger, white tiger pelt goes for like $25,000, and a white lion, I believe, it depends on the hunter, but you're talking $35,000,
$40,000. Wow, that's unbelievable.
Right. So
this
that they
just can make somebody a fur coat.
Well, and or a rug, and or a trophy above the, you know, fireplace and everything. Absolutely, and most of these animals, see, they've got canned. White lion farms in Africa, because not unlike the tigers in China, because of how much money they make for them, and then they're drugged and they're put in a small enclosure, and then you just go out with your gun and you shoot them and say, you know, hey, you've got this beautiful white, you know, lion that you hunted. That's the reality.
I have a question, and we have a question from our audience. My question is, in regards to the white lions, so on and so forth, how they're basically, it's hard for them to exist. I remember on my father's farm, we had albino peacocks as well as the albino guinea hens. And I remember my father was saying that the albino peacocks were highly desirable because of the fact that they were so exotic. And all I thought to myself was, wow, this animal has pink eyes and it's got white feathers, and big deal. You could look at a chicken and get the same reaction. But I always felt that the regular peacocks were beautiful because of all the feathers. Well, mostly the males are the ones with the beautiful feathers. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, once again, the albino, which basically naturally will make the animal weaker, is more desirable by human beings. So I just wanted to ask you about that, or just bring that up. But the question that is from our audience is, do you think that there is going to be some type of international exposure to these poachers and whatnot in Africa as well as other parts of the world, the same way that on, take for example, Animal Planet, they have Whale Wars? It's a show in which these group of activists are actually down in Antarctica going against the Japanese whalers that are trying to kill these animals that are on the endangered species list. Do you think that there's anything like that that's going to ever come about?
You know, that's a really good question, and it's a great idea, and it's a great format for a show. I personally have worked with two people over in India, long distance, helping them track poachers using, you know, kind of talking with the tigers, actually. And the thing that you run into is constant fear for their lives. I mean, this is a, you've got to remember, you're in countries that are very poor. Money is valued highly, and animals are probably the main source of the income. And yes, and it's a tight network. It's very, very difficult. I know, in fact, these tiger poachers in India came from Tibet. And so it's a very, you can see we're not really broadcasting that. And
oh,
so
yeah.
There's, well, I guess we are now, but, you know, previously not. And but very fearful of their lives. And so it's going to be different in that sense because these guys are literally in the bush. They don't really have any place to hide, per se. And that would be, I think, the main concern, the international exposure as far as a TV show might be a little more dangerous in that aspect than, like, the whales and things, only because there's just...
They're on the ground, you think?
You're in the bush, yeah, on the ground in the bush, and there is a... Word of mouth spreads fast, you know, especially when you're talking about money, you know? Yeah, it's a different world out there, June. But it's a great idea.
It's kind of interesting with Whale Wars. I don't have the opportunity to watch TV. If I do watch TV, it's always some type of documentary or something. I cannot listen to reality shows, and at this point, I can't even stomach the news for the most part. And my nephew was telling me, oh, let's watch Whale Wars, and I've never seen it before. And all I thought to myself is, wow, this is so cool. These group of activists are actually out there, and they are doing everything within their physical power to attack these Japanese seamen. And I do realize the danger that's involved with the with fighting on the ground, so on and so forth. I actually was invited by a colleague of mine a couple years back. They have these programs in which you have to pay for your own transportation there, and you have to pay for the shots, so on and so forth. But basically what you do is you spend 3 months doing wildlife rescue, and they fly you in through a helicopter, and basically you camp out with these people. They are your family. They are your everything for the next 3 months, and you are dealing with the same people, the poachers and all the other locals that are trying to kill these animals in order to make a living. And it is pretty heinous, some of the things that they see, but it's also really great that they're able to stop some of the poaching that's going on. But I do think that if there is a way to create awareness globally, that would be really ideal. Is there any chance of getting a list of some of these people that are involved with, I guess, different poaching groups that are trying to exploit and kill these types of animals?
That are trying to kill the animals? Boy, that would really be great.
People are too afraid to publicize that.
Not only that, but there's, a corporation's formed, and there's, the track is very hard to ferret out, to say the least, because of the implications and everything with not only the governments, but even the local people and things like that. This is very underground, unfortunately, for the most part. But I do want to, because I know we're getting close here a little bit on time, but one of the things, June, that I think it's real important for the audience, your audience, and for people in general to become aware of, because if you look right now at the economy and the world and how many things, negative things you hear about every day, I know a lot of people are in fear and they don't know what to do. They're losing their jobs. Remember, I talk with the animals, and when I'm talking with them, my clients, I don't really have animal problems. I've got people problems. And because, again, the animals are reflecting back to us, they're mirroring what is, a lot of times out of balance with us, and or showing us what we truly believe that may not be serving us at this moment in time. And I would just like to convey to your audience or anyone who's listening that because you cannot be out in nature without having a heart experience. You just feel different in nature. We've really lost our connection with nature. We live in concrete jungles now and computers and technology, which is wonderful, but there's no balance there. And with that, then, the white tiger, we've got one that we rescued from a roadside zoo at Big Cat Rescue.
A roadside zoo.
Yes,
exactly, a roadside zoo. For the folks such as myself that are up,
what's a roadside
up
zoo?
Up in Yankeeville up here, what is a roadside zoo?
Well, a roadside zoo is basically one of these little podunk places off the road that you can pull into and go and, the price of admission, go in there and either pet the animals or, have some kind of an experience with them. And they're not accredited. They're not anything other than a way to make money, another way that they are exploiting animals. They're kept in very poor conditions. They're not fed properly. It's a miserable existence for the animal, but it's a tourist trap. And so we got Zabu from a roadside zoo, and she is a white tiger, a liger,
wow,
because she's a combination. She does have a cleft palate. She has, and her stripes are not black. They're kind of brownish. So she again has the genetic mutation. And, but you know what Zabu has shared with me is that the white tiger, the white lion specifically, the message for humanity at this point in time is that, yes, we're coming out of an era of darkness. There's a lot of scientific evidence, and that can, you know, that's another show. However,
yes, that is another show. I think there's so much that we need to definitely cover that that is definitely on the agenda.
And what they're telling us is that the animals are trying to help us overcome our fear, and especially the white animals, because, again, you think about that. They absolutely have no fear, even though they are white. And if we can use that light that they have without killing them, in other words, share with them, come from a soul connection, a heart connection, if you will, with them. See, that we don't get the power from the animal by killing it. We get the power from the animal by touching it, June. And touching it can mean a lot of things, not physically touching, but just being in its presence. Or, you know, on Facebook, I have every day I put animal medicine because I'm sharing with people the essence of that animal and how we can use their energy in our everyday life. And so with that, they're trying to show us the light that is within us right now at this point in time so that we overcome our fears, because in overcoming our fears and we see from a different perspective, which the animals are helping us see right now, when there's no fear, we're coming from our heart, from total love. And in that perspective, we have the solutions. We can start cooperating not only with the animals, but with ourselves, other cultures that we used to see differences with. We can come now as a unified being and start implementing solutions instead of keeping focused on the darkness and what we think is wrong right now with the planet, because there's really nothing wrong. And, they, you know, as we, again, another show, but the animals have a tremendous message for us right now that will help us survive as a species and even help us through 2012. And it's not what everybody thinks it is.
Yeah, but, Lauren, let me ask you a question. I study bees, and I've been exposed to animals my whole life. And one of the things that I've learned about animals is that, a lot of things about animals, but first and foremost, animals really do have, they will provide for their young, whereas human beings, it depends upon the person. I mean, that's one major difference. Another is, if you look at bees work together. They work together within a hive to support one another. And the reason that I'm pointing these things out is because, do you think it's even possible for people to grasp this type of mentality and really apply it? I mean, people have such a hard time grasping just some basics that, do you think that at this particular point it's going to take a modern-day miracle for people to really understand the lessons that they're being taught right in front of their face? It's almost as if they are just completely blind and they're oblivious.
Do I think it's going to take a miracle? No, I think it takes a willingness. I think that, I always, as Dr. Phil says, well, how's it working for you? You know, I mean, we have come out of a period and I have all kinds of scientific research to back this up. I love the integration of science and spirit. But we're coming out of a period of creation right now in which it's been pretty much left brain dominated. And the male aspect of ourselves has been in control and dominating. And now things are returning to a integration of everything. In other words, integration of left brain, right brain, female, male, you know, east and west. We see this every science and spirit, mind and heart. For so long, we have left our heart out of the equation. And my belief is, and research is, again, showing this, heartmath.org is a great resource for this. The heart intelligence is not only helping us build heart resilience, but also leading us through this stressful period of a major transition and transformation in our species. So a miracle, no. I think awareness and a willingness to say, hey, you know, I don't like the way my life is working. What can, you know, help me here or show me what I can do. And it's really very simple. And it turns around in the blink of an eye.
Well,
but we have to quit focusing. You know, the law of attraction was great for this too, June. It showed us wherever we direct our attention, you know, that's what we give life to, and that's what starts to grow. We have to make the choice, the decision, to say, you know, I'm not going to focus on the negative anymore. I'm a positive, you know, I'm positivity in action.
And people like you are definitely very, very positive. And we need to hear, as you said in the very beginning, we need to focus on the positive, and we need to hear more positive messages and connect with other positive people. So on that note, I just want to take a moment, because we are almost out of time, I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. And if you could just tell our audience how they can get in touch with you and how they can get involved with the work that you do.
Well, I have a website, Soul, S-O-U-L, hyphen, B as in boy, E, hyphen, it.com, soulbeit.com. Also, I'm on Facebook under Laura Lassiter, Twitter, Laura Lassiter. You can just pretty much, you know, Google me anywhere. And I'm finishing a book on Big Cat Rescue that we will be editing here shortly. I don't know when it will be coming out, but it is the true stories of the cats that I've talked with at Big Cat Rescue and their profound knowledge. And, you know, we go from there.
And what is your Facebook? What is your Facebook? Is it just people could just do a search under Laura Lassiter and they'll pull you up?
Yes, they can. And or Twitter under Laura Lassiter. And I will be coming out, you know, I've got another book that I'm starting on. It's a little bit different and it's more along the spiritual lines, connections with the animals and everything. But right now, and also YouTube, I've got a YouTube page where we have a lot of podcasts of the cats that I've talked with out at Big Cat Rescue.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're really marvelous.
Thank you. And, you know, they can, and if they live in Florida, they can always visit Big Cat Rescue. We are privately funded. We don't have any grants or anything else, donations. And if you just want to make a difference, you know, Big Cat Rescue has a cat law page that you can go and sign some petitions to make a difference, whether it be canned hunts or changing the laws about even owning an exotic cat. I don't support zoos. There's lots of ways that we can start to make a difference now, small ways. The first thing is just, again, to become aware of the plight of animals in general.
Well, I think at this particular point, especially just to reemphasize what you said, if people will focus on the positive and connect with other like-minded individuals, I think that's what's the most important. But for those of you that didn't catch everything that Laura said, if you go to theorganicview.com's guest section, it's up on one of the tabs on the top, there's some more information as well as the information that Laura just stated before in regards to getting in touch with her, so on and so forth. And please, by all means, reach out to her on Twitter, on Facebook, or just visit Big Cat Rescue. So on that note, Laura, thank you so much for being on the show.
And tomorrow on The Organic View, I'm going to have a gentleman named Lee Doran, who is going to discuss his viral video in which he critiques the story of cosmetics, which is a very, very controversial video that talks about this new legislation. So see you tomorrow. Stay tuned and have a great day, everybody. So long.